Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hi, I'm Virgie Rodriguez, and this is A Race of Your Own, where we talk about how inspiration leads to resilience. And today's guest, I'm really excited to have, because I have a lot of questions and I think he has all the answers, but we'll see. An entertainment and media entrepreneur, creator of E! Entertainment Television. It's the platform that gave, you know, the rise to shows as like Talk Soup and Fashion Police that starred Joan Rivers. He's a pioneer in media, graduate of Brooklyn College, started his career with Manhattan Cable as an underground splicer. And I need to know that story because that sounds amazing. And he even started a media company in Russia. We have Larry Neymar. Thank you.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Larry. Now, you have worked in the industry for a while, and hearing that you started kind of, you know, as a director of operations and then finally director of corporate development as you rose in the ranks, you know, starting at Manhattan Cable, what did you know then? Because a lot of what I talk about on here is like about purpose, right? Did you know then that that's kind of what you wanted to do, that eventually you wanted to start a media company?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, you've got me like 5 years, you know, into the future there. But when I got out of college, I graduated Brooklyn College.
Nice.
And I had a degree in economics. Mm-hmm. I quickly discovered that there weren't a lot of jobs for economists around. And I figured I would take something that was kind of temporary and that I could just do for the summer and, you know, then figure out what I want to be when I grow up. So somebody I knew was in the Electricians Union in New York. Mm-hmm. And they said, we just organized this thing. It's called cable television. I don't know what it is. And I don't really think people ever pay for television. But anyway, they'll give you a job. Go see the union shop steward. And I did. And they gave me a job. I was an assistant underground splicer in Manhattan, which meant I would go into the manholes every day and go down with the roaches and the rats and put the wires together. And they paid me $90 a week. And
a week.
Yeah, $90
wow.
a week.
Wow.
And but then, you know, I kind of started doing better and they couldn't understand why I knew how to use the equipment faster than anybody else. And it was just me. I read the instruction books. But I rose through the ranks pretty quickly there. And I ended up, I think I was 23 years old. I became the vice chairman of the Cable TV Workers of America. I was a union person representative. And then I moved into management and I was director of operations. And then I became director of corporate development when the company I worked for was Time Incorporated, which mm-hmm. at that point was just really a publishing company, Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated Magazine, books. And but they really wanted to move into becoming a media company. Mm-hmm. And so I was fortunate to be there. And when they decided to really increase their cable holdings, I was there, and they made me the head of corporate development and stuff. And, you know, that's kind of how it all started for me. I was in Manhattan 10 years, five in the technical, putting the wires together, and then in various management positions.
And then was there a point there, once you kind of got up in the ranks, right, was there a point there where you were like, you know what, I think I could create something, right? Because you were at the precipice of cable, and now, you know, where we are now, there's like so many outlets. I mean, people can just literally, you know, make something and put it up on Tubi, for instance, right? So was it something that you had in the back of your mind that came to you?
No, not at all. My family, I grew up in part of Brooklyn that is still not trendy Brooklyn. It's still a hood.
I'm from Queens. I'm from Astoria.
Coney Island. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Neighbors.
And, you know, parents, immigrant stock, and the wishes of my parents were that, you know, I'd get a civil service job and be able to retire with a pension and pay my rent and do all of that. And so that's kind of the way I grew up. And okay. Even when I was in Manhattan, and like I say, I rose through the ranks, I finally left there. It was kind of interesting. We bought this big company. It was actually the biggest cable company in the country at the time. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, I'm smarter than the guy that I work for. I'm smarter than the president of the company. But I just said, they're never going to get rid of them and put me in those spots. And, you know, and they would tell me, be patient, you're young, and be patient, you're young. And that, finally what happened was all the big cities began to realize they wanted cable, and they was issuing franchises. And the city of Los Angeles issued a franchise for a company to come in and build the cable system here. But their one caveat was they didn't want it to go on telephone poles. They wanted it to go underground. Well, the only person in the country who knew how to build underground cable systems was me. And so I got recruited to come out here and build the cable system. And
wow.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I was 30 years old, and I got off the plane, and they gave me one piece of paper from the city of L.A. saying, here's what you got to build, and gave me another one from Toronto Dominion Bank saying, here's a $400 million credit line. We're going back to Toronto. Call us if you need us. And so I got, you know, thrown into the fire really early and stuff. And we built it. Valley Cable was the first 61-channel two-way cable system ever built in America. And I had, you know, all these people working for me. But, you know, when you're a Brooklyn kid and you come out to L.A., everybody's in the entertainment business, and all my relatives and friends and neighbors, they're all going to parties and premieres. And so I would call the studios and say, hey, you know, could you put me on the list? And they're going, no, you're like the phone company or the gas company. You're a utility. You can't come. So finally, I just said to one of the marketing guys, I think it was at Universal, I said, listen, the best marketing vehicle that you have for movies is the movie trailer. Mm. I said, but the only time I ever see the movie trailer is when I'm already in the movies. I said, it seems kind of backwards to me. So I said, well, we really can't afford to buy 2 minutes of time on television. I said, tell you what, you send those trailers to me, I'll put them on television on the cable system, but you put me on those party lists. And they said, yeah, sure, if you do that. But, you know, then what happened was, when I started doing kind of market surveys, mm-hmm. said to people, what's your favorite channel? They go, oh, we love CNN. I love MTV. I love that trailer channel. And I'm going, wait a second. I get the best 2 minutes of a $50 million movie for free, and people love it. But, you know, and I continued on. But the company that I worked for was from Canada, mm-hmm. and they sold, and they went back to Toronto. And they wanted me to go to Toronto. And I'm like, no. I didn't go from Brooklyn to L.A. to go to Toronto. I said, I'm done with the cold. So me and my friend Alan started playing around with ideas and just said, we got to think of something where we could keep me in L.A. Mm-hmm. And we came up with the idea. Originally, we called it Movie Time, but then we changed the name to E!
Wow. And, you know, you mentioned, and I'm kind of going back, which is such a, like, it's a great trajectory. And, like, you came up with an idea when no one else was thinking about it, right? Or maybe somebody was, but didn't have maybe the ingenuity. I don't know what that is. Because to me, it's just like you saw a niche. You saw a hole and a void. And you were like, there's something there. And you put two and two together. There was something about that.
Yeah. Growing up in the cable business, you know, I watched the start of Home Box Office. And I watched the start of ESPN and CNN and MTV. And, you know, I looked at it, and Alan and I, we just kept playing around with ideas. I said, you know, if you really think about it, cable back then was really an electronic newspaper. Mm-hmm. At CNN was the headlines. ESPN was the sports page. I said, but what's clearly missing is the second most read of any newspaper, which is the entertainment pages. Right. So we said, we're going to create the entertainment pages of the cable TV newsletter. Now, we wrote a plan. We thought it was brilliant. We talked to people. They would go, that's a great idea, but you're not Ted Turner. You're not Rupert Murdoch. You can't start a TV network because people don't start TV networks. It's impossible. So after 3.5 years of being told, good idea, but you're not Rupert Murdoch, it took us 3.5 years to raise the first 10 cents.
Okay.
And then we did. And as soon as we put it on the air, people said, oh, my God, you should have told us that's what you want to do. We would have given you that money 3 years ago.
You're like, that's what we did say. Nobody was listening. So in that moment, when somebody tells you something like that, right, like being in the business, a lot of what I talk about here is about being resilient in moments like that, right, where you see something and you're the underdog, right? People are going to look at you and go, cute concept, kid. You know what I mean? Like, nice. But yeah, talk to us later. And then when you do it and you raise the money and you came back, they're like, oh, why didn't you tell us? You're like, I did. I tried to tell you. I saw the vision. So it's almost like this visionary thing. You saw the future there. You and your friend came together and you kind of saw something.
Yeah. I mean, we looked at it. I mean, again, it was fairly simple in our minds anyway.
Right.
Apparently, it wasn't as simple as we thought, but it was a good thing not to realize it. But if you really looked at MTV, and, you know, what did they do? They had a green screen and they had a host and they would show a video and the host would go, and Madonna has a new video. I go, we could stand the host in front of a green screen and go, and Schwarzenegger has a new movie.
Right.
I said, it's the same arm movement. It's not rocket science. So that's really how we started it, because we couldn't raise a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the time we started, the going rate to start a TV network was somewhere between $60 and $100 million.
Whoa.
Okay. We finally met somebody on Wall Street who could only give us two and a half, actually. And we said, well, we're never going to get to 60. We might as well take the 2.5 and we'll figure the rest out. And a lot of people don't realize that, again, there's never been a TV network started by people. Mm-hmm. Then, and there hasn't been since. There's really only one. That's Global Network, that started by a person.
Wow.
But I had a friend who was teaching radio, television, film in University of Texas in Austin. And I called him up and I said, Brian, you got kids who need intern jobs? And he goes, yeah, I got a bunch. I went, send me them all. We rented apartments in Hollywood. I bought mattresses. He sent 31 kids from Texas. And we launched, and people don't realize, he launched with 11 employees and 31 interns.
Wow.
And only $2.5 million. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, it we executed really well. And
at that point, it's like about really being swift and cunning and like figuring it out, not like in a bad way, but in a great way of being like, we need to get this thing off the ground, right?
You know, there's that saying that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Sometimes when you don't have a lot of resources, mm-hmm. you got to really think hard and do the right thing. And we did. And, you know, part of the real reason that E took off initially was that people just got amazed at what they were seeing.
Right.
They felt like they were like a fly on the wall seeing something they weren't supposed to. And the reason was because we didn't have a lot of money. We couldn't even buy like real video equipment. We bought like used equipment from a company that used to use them for their sales training tapes. So everything looked very pirate. Everybody who worked for us, they were kids, you know.
Right.
My friend Brian wanted to kill us because most of his kids, he sent 31.
Uh-huh.
So they started the summer. They were interns. By the end of the summer, half of them were vice presidents and never went back to Texas.
What?
Of course, as soon as it went on the air, everybody
blew up.
And
yeah.
In the first year, we ended up in 14 different countries, and now it's 142 countries and stuff. Now that everybody talks about influencers, mm-hmm. and when you think about it, there's no bigger influencer of pop culture in the world than he is today.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the Kardashians. You know?
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting, too, it's like, speaking of that, and speaking of social media and you know, creativity has gotten lost, right? A lot of people would say, you know, nothing new under the sun, right? Like there won't be another E, and there won't, right? We won't see that. But when it comes to like creativity and like continuing that, and now we have all these platforms and it's like everything being washed down, right? I know this is a tough question because of the state of the industry, and I hate asking the question of like, well, where do you see the industry going? Because that's so like, you know, we don't know. Like, it's all kind of up in the air. But how do you stay ahead of the curve at this point when there's been so much done?
Well, yeah.
Maybe that, like, it. I know it's like, how do you have, is there a real answer for that? How do we know, right? Because tomorrow it could be, now it's AI. Now we're talking about AI. Yeah.
It's funny because I actually think I do know where it's all going.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
I think I do.
I mean, whether I do or not, who knows?
Yeah.
To me, it's just logical. I mean, technology marches on whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were to ask me today, would you start E? I would tell you no, because it's a linear television network.
Right.
I mean, you get to this very simple premise. Do you want to watch what NBC wants you to watch when they want you to watch it? Or do you want to watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it?
Right.
Well, it's all streaming and it's all on demand. And as though, who cares what NBC thinks should be on Thursday night at 9:00?
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
I don't care. If I want to watch it on my cell phone, I could watch it on my pad. I could watch it on my TV. I mean, that's where all that stuff is going.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at technology, and I fight with everybody in town here about this kind of stuff. You go back, everybody's thinking about AI mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And the problem is not AI.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we don't have the controls over AI that we should have, because our politicians are scared the heck out of it. And they haven't written the regulations
around
to govern it.
Mm-hmm.
Our guilds and our unions think that if they put their head in the sand, it's going to go away. I mean, look at when the music business was faced with digital streaming.
Yeah.
They were like, we're never going to let this happen. We'll never let it happen. And now they complain, well, iTunes got so powerful and Spotify did. And I'm going, well, they wouldn't have got so powerful if you would have paid attention at the beginning. You just thought it would go away. And technology doesn't go away. You go back to, you know, 150 years ago, the big thing was people owned horse ranches because they thought everybody was going to have a horse and buggy. And then somebody invented, you know, cars. And the horse ranchers weren't real happy with cars. But if you look out the window, you're going to see a lot more cars than you see horse and buggies.
And speaking of that, because I was a dancer and a choreographer, I came up in the era where music videos ruled. They ruled. And so for us, you know, we had Dancers Alliance. We weren't really ruled by the unions, right? We had a committee, we had a, you know, organization that kind of helped and standardized it. And all the agents did great at like leveling out what those rates should be, right? But then digital, right, became a thing, and streaming and all this stuff. So then it went into, well, if you're going to own my likeness in this Britney Spears music video forever, because I'm dancing right behind her and you can see me, like, well, now I'm going to get a $400, $500 buyout. And that's all over the world in perpetuity in every single galaxy in the world. And any new, because the language that they added was like any new kind of media.
Invented now or in perpetuity.
In perpetuity. And they love perpetuity and they love like in all the universe, in all the galaxies, right? And now MTV has wiped their archive.
Yeah.
So then it's like, well, wait, why? Like, then why even sign off on that if in 20, 30 years you're going to just wipe it?
Yeah, no, it makes no sense. And, you know, I talk to a lot of the guilds and the unions mm-hmm. about this, and I try and use this simple example. AI is not going away. Technology doesn't go away because there is very good use for it. Mm-hmm. It's just you got to manage it and put it in the kind of context where you can control it. It doesn't control you. And the example I use a lot, I said, okay, 12-year-old kid can't say, hey, I feel like driving, take the car keys, get in the car and start driving. Okay, because you got to be a certain age. You got to take driving lessons.
You got to be able to reach driving, the pedals.
Got to take a driving test. Yeah. And then you have to obey the rules of the road. Because then there are penalties if you don't. With AI, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Bad people are allowed to do bad things and there's no recourse to it. But there really is recourse. And, you know, we have contracts here. Mm-hmm. And I say to people, you know, even at, you know, the Screen Actors Guild, excuse me, if I make a TV show, I got to pay certain rates. It's in the contract. And if I put it into reruns, first time it reruns, I got to pay this. And the second time I got to pay this. It's already spelled out. Now, I could just say, heck with you, I'm not paying you. Mm-hmm. But you have a contract. You take me to court and you're going to win and I'm going to have to pay. So I don't do bad things because I know there's bad things going to happen to me for doing it. You could do the same thing. I mean, when you look at SAG, and, you know, the whole thing was like, oh, we got really screwed in a Netflix deal. Mm-hmm. We don't get our fair share. And you know what? They don't get their fair share. But they did a deal with Netflix 10 years ago when Netflix was a little this. And then they made a 10-year deal. And then COVID came along. Mm-hmm. And everybody couldn't go to the movies and they started watching Netflix. And they're going, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
So Netflix grew. And all the, you know, people in SAG are going, oh, we're not getting our fair share. Well, they're living by the contract. You're living by the contract. You're doing a new thing. Don't do a 10-year deal. Make it shorter. Because technology gets faster and it accelerates.
Faster
it gets
and faster.
Faster and faster. Or hire a futurist. Now, what they do is they hire someone who knows how to use AI today. Well, AI a year ago and AI today, I think the number I saw was 800 times more powerful than it was 1 year ago.
Wow.
Where is it going to go? If you're going to do a long-term deal, think of the possibilities of where it can go and build in safeguards for yourself that if certain things happen, either the rates kick up or you have the right to renegotiate. But even still, when you look at it, they go, well, you're going to make a movie and you're going to use their name and their likeness in more movies and stuff. And I go, you can't do that. For the most part, celebrities are brands. Okay. And there's brands have values and stuff. So if I make a movie with Tom Cruise, I got to pay Tom Cruise. I can't just take my digital images of Tom Cruise and put them in a porn movie.
Right.
So you write the contract that says, if you want to use Tom's likeness in another movie, here's the rate you got to pay. But you also have to present it to Tom first, and he's got to say yes, because you got to make sure that it's not off-brand. I mean, like I say, you can't take Tom Cruise and put him in a porn movie. It's off-brand. So put him, you got the legal basis for doing it. Use those legal basis for at least governing it now, you know, in the short term and stuff like that. But it's not going away.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going away. I think it's only going to get stronger, really. And I mean, people are even just creating, apparently, and I forgot the name of it, but it's like the name of the character. But there is an AI character that already has like 1 million, you know, followers on social media and is already making money as an entity, I guess, or as a brand, like you would say. Do you think that technology or new media, so to speak, digital media, whatever they want to call it, because I know the union likes to call it new media, right? Because we don't know what the new media is.
I've been in new media for 50 years now.
Yes, you have. And you've been kind of a pioneer in that sense, right? What do you think that is what led to, like, because syndication used to be such a big thing. I mean, actors were, if a show got syndicated, they could live off of that, you know, forever. Now, is that what kind of killed syndication? Like, I mean, because things don't really go into syndication anymore, I feel.
Well, it really, syndication the way we used to
used
know
to
it.
Used to do it. Yeah, used gone. To do it.
But, you know, you look at all these digital channels at the Hulus and Paramount Plus, they're pulling from library and stuff. And when those things run, the people who are in them, the actors, the directors, everybody gets paid. I'm not saying they get paid fairly, but they get paid because there's certain things. But the new contracts have to govern that kind of thing. Right. So you're not going to get paid every time it plays again, but you should get paid for the amount of people who watch it.
I mean, I do. There's been some stuff I worked on and I get some residuals. I get some stuff. They're not very big. but I mean, I guess I meant syndication like when it was like Friends, you know, maybe that's just, you know, such a big show. I mean, those, you know, those actors were, I mean, years, right? Seinfeld. You know, those kind of shows where those actors were pretty much they can live off of that one show.
Oh, God, yeah.
Forever. I mean, you know, and that doesn't,
you know,
gone.
They wanted Jerry to be in that last season. They wanted to do one more season.
Oh, did they?
And they actually offered Jerry Seinfeld $110 million to do the last season. He turned it down.
Wow. Wait, how long ago was that?
It would have been the last season.
Oh, it would have been regularly back then. Okay, got it. And you know, and you talked about too going into other countries and launching some stuff there. I know you've launched some projects in China, and then you were also the first to bring Western shows and musical acts to the post-Soviet TV landscape, right? Were those markets that you felt like were important to be in because of the reach? Because of the amount of people?
A combination of things. Number one is just size and reach. And could you look at a market and say, okay, this thing is opening up. It's early on. So there's no built-in legacy things. Like brands are going to need to go in there and explain who they are, and which means money is going to be put against it. But also the thing that I look for, and it sounds kind of funny, and I use him as my symbol for the devil. He's not really the devil, but not far off, is I look for places where I can compete with Rupert Murdoch.
Okay.
And, you know, when you look at Russia.
I love it.
And you look at China, they're so fearful of big media that they, you know, they were very welcoming to me because I said, okay, we could get the best of the West without having to deal with being bullied by the big media companies from the West. I mean, even in China, I mean, people are still amazed that We got into China. I got into China quite a while ago, and we're the only Western company that actually operates as a media company in China. And when the Chinese asked me to set up a media company there, I said, you know, you don't let Western media companies in here. And they went, well, we don't let the ones we don't like. I said, okay, why are you going to be so nice to me? And the answer was, we have a fight with Rupert Murdoch. It's front page of the Wall Street Journal. We have a fight with you. We go out for drinks. We scream and yell at each other. But tomorrow we're good.
Nice.
I said, for now, we'd rather do it that way.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that's actually pretty honest. So they set us up as an experimental media company in China. And we've been an experiment for 14 years now.
Wow.
When they want you there, they make it easy. When they don't want you there, they make it impossible.
And again, I know we talked about it a little earlier, but like, competition, right? In that sense, it's always healthy, right? To have some sort of competition, right?
Absolutely.
Of course, because it'll put that fire up under you, right? But to the same extent, when it's like even myself, I'm just someone coming up, right? And I'm small and I see, you know, social, and that's why I keep going back to social media because I was shocked and surprised at how many people actually, people that have bigger followings, more money, et cetera, a bigger platform, actually turn to people like myself and other creators that I know and watch our stuff. They actually watch our stuff to get inspiration, and they might not credit us, but they're there and they're watching us, right? And then, but then they also aren't giving me a handout. You go, you know, I like your stuff. Come on board, you know, come work with me or come work for me, right? And so it's about this. So then, when it comes to creativity, it starts to stifle it, a little bit, right? Where you know, you might get frustrated, it might be whatever, versus just being like, no, I'm gonna go gung-ho and I'm gonna go full force.
I mean, I think where things have gone, I mean, just look at the podcast world.
Right.
There. I mean, the barriers to entry are almost non-existent. I mean, there's a lot of bad podcasts. We got to admit that.
Not this one, though.
No, no, no.
This one's amazing.
And the reason I'll plug Andy a little bit. The reason we use this is because we get the closest thing to a television show, like a talk show.
Right.
Shooting with 4K cameras and good audio and good lighting and stuff. And I think, you know, we were saying before, when you start something that people are not used to, they're very forgiving. Like when we started E with, you know, using literally corporate equipment, you know, used corporate equipment, people were forgiving because they never saw anything like it. But as we went along, it was clear they were going, hey, you know, you got to start lighting properly. You got to start giving us real audio. You got to shoot with real cameras and stuff. So we're doing a podcast now called Stall Talk, and we just decided that we're going to really make it good from, even though we could go down, we don't want to go down. We said, let's go to the highest level we could go to today and stuff. And eventually the rest of them will catch up to that level.
Right. And do you, and again, not everybody has the means, right, to make it happen. Not everybody can get the best equipment or a best studio, even just like this, right, to make it happen. So in that sense and in that regard, is that what you mean? Like, kind of like almost be forgiving to yourself. Like everybody has a phone. Everybody has a you know, a camera on their phone that they can just shoot. So as you start, like kind of just take the first step is kind of what I'm hearing you say. Like just kind of go for it.
I mean, technology is so good today. And, right. You know, again, when I got into the TV business, the barrier to entry is, of course, you're like $300,000 for a camera.
Right.
Now, I can take my iPhone and fly somewhere in the afternoon and shoot a movie on my iPhone. It's like, the barrier, even for podcasting in the good studio, the numbers are not prohibitive. So if I want to play with ideas and stuff, it's a great place to start, see what works, take your time, get it right. And, you know, then if you want to go on to, let's call it a bigger stage, you then could fine tune your offering before you go out there without a lot of big networks annoying you and telling you what to do and stuff like that.
So. We like that. We like having the independent kind of approach.
Yeah, so and speak. Especially, you know, for someone like me who, you know, I'm stubborn. Once I have a vision, I think it's right. I'm not right a lot of times, but every once in a while. But when I'm going to be wrong, I want me to be wrong. I don't want someone to tell me how to be wrong.
And it's kind of almost essential in anything, right? And I'm going to use the word entrepreneur in that sense, right? Just because everybody seems to like resonate with that word, but it's really just about kind of being your own boss in that sense and seeing your vision and taking the steps to get it done, right? You also in 2020, well, this year, won the Media Visionary Award from the Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
What was that like?
It was weird, you know, because I grew up watching, you know, the first space launches and stuff like that. And this year I get a call saying, there's this award that's happening at Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and you're going to be one of the three recipients. And I'm like, what do you mean? They said, well, the astronauts every year have these three categories, and you're going to be the visionary of the year stuff.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. You know, you get to go and look at all the rockets and, you know, all that other stuff. It was really cool. So, I did that, and that was like a few months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds because you also received a Lifetime Achievement Award, at the 2018 Hollywood Tribute Awards as well. You know, sometimes I feel like stepping out and just believing in yourself, having like a certain level of confidence is more important than anything, right? And a lot of what I talk about on here, being in a race of your own, you're on your own race. You go hills that go up, go down, they plateau. Sometimes you're in a moment where it's just tumbleweeds and you're sitting there going, I don't know what road to take. There's a fork in the road. Which way do I go? What would you say to, you know, my viewers, to people that are watching this, to stay on course, right? What piece of advice would you give them? Because you seem to have you're very tapped into the message you're getting, right, for yourself, like what road you want to take. But sometimes for some people on this path that they've never been, maybe they don't get the support from family or friends saying, sure, go be a creative, or sure, go after that idea. What advice would you give someone to stay in the race of their own?
Well, I mean, number one, I'm very much against the whole thing that everybody gets all this advice. Follow your passion. And follow your passion is good, but you got to temper that follow your passion with the reality of, you know, is this ever going to turn into a business that self-sustains? We all have the need to eat and pay the rent and stuff like that. So you could follow your passion and starve. And what's going to happen is when you can't pay the rent and can't eat, you're going to give up on your passion and go on. So you really need to be very truthful to yourself and self-assess. I mean, I wake up every day with 10 new ideas.
Nice.
Why we don't understand. But by the time I go to sleep, I go, oh, those are pretty dopey. Every once in a while, I have a good one. But I could put my ego aside and say, yeah, it sounded good this morning, and now that I think about it, it's not so good. Or the business environment changes, or the regulatory environment changes. And you got to be willing to just say, you know what, next. Just leave it there and go next. Because if you can't sustain it financially, eventually you're going to give it up, or you're going to get married and have a kid, and you got to feed the baby and stuff like that. I think what you got to do is find something you're good at and just work your butt off and become great at it. And then I guarantee that then becomes your passion. Like, my passion was never television. I never even dreamt of.
I'm saying, there's got to be some sort of, there was something driving you. There was something that you have, you seem to, from what I'm kind of hearing even you say, you have the knack to kind of figure out, hey, yeah, let's do this network thing, and maybe let's go over here and do this other thing. Let's do this, talk soup or, whatever shows, whatever it was. Like, you seem to have that knack.
Yeah, well, a lot of it, particularly with the, the E situation and stuff, it we were very different. And because, at the time you had Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and those things. And they took the entertainment business very seriously. It was like almost like we're curing cancer. Alan and I just took it a different way. We said, Hollywood is funny stuff. Don't try and make believe it's rocket science.
Right.
So,
it's not that
and we
serious.
Changed the whole way that entertainment reporting was done because, when you go to a red carpet and everybody's, so Mr. Cruise, tell me about your next movie. I'm going, oh, that's so boring. Yeah. We go, hey, Tom, where did you get those shoes? Those are really cool.
Yeah.
And people love that. It was just a different way of presenting that stuff. So, that irreverence, I mean, when you think of Talk Soup, I mean, quite honestly, when, I came up with that, I told everybody, I said, I want to do a TV show that makes fun of TV shows. And everybody went, what? You're out of your mind. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Talk Soup ran 26 years.
It ran that long?
Yeah, it ran 26 years.
Wow.
It was Talk Soup, then it became The Soup and
stuff.
And now it's kind of the format that everybody, even in the streaming world and the online world, it's everybody's following that. That kind of
it's back even on TikTok. Like, people put the the green screen behind them. They put whatever the article or whatever is, and they talk about it. Just a
so we changed all of that, and then you look at other shows like it's funny, and I tell a story when we applied for to get press credentials for the Oscars. We were rejected, and the answer they said you're just some dumb little cable network. We're not letting you on the red carpet. And quite honestly, we took the crew and myself too. I was the grip. I carried the camera box.
Oh, nice.
And we climbed over the fence and we snuck into the Academy Awards. And we were on the red carpet asking people, because we like the clothes better than we like the movies.
Okay.
And, and that kind of led to, people going, wow, that's amazing. We thought we were watching something we weren't supposed to. Well, you weren't, because we snuck in. We got caught and thrown out. But, it was that simple. And that kind of led to that next show called, Fashion Police.
Nice. Joan Rivers.
With Joan. And again, it was that irreverence. Don't take it seriously.
R.P. Joan Rivers. Yeah, she was.
Howard Stern the same way. When we met Howard, he was telling me, that he wants to do a TV show. And I'm like, oh, God, it's radio. It's dead. But then we thought about it. It was a sitcom.
Right.
People think of it as a as a radio show, was it?
No.
He had this ensemble cast. It was a replica. There was an old TV show here called WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes, I remember.
It was WKRP in Cincinnati. But when we introduced it to people, my own team, they were going, Larry, when you wanted to do like Talk Soup, we thought you were out of your mind. But radio's been dead for 40 years. What are you talking about?
Right.
Howard did pretty well.
He did. And you know what? That's the template, I feel, now for a lot of podcasts. A lot of people do, which is what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Too,
I mean, that was a podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody realized that
no.
what it was.
Yeah. He was kind of like, he's like a template for that almost. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's more, but he's one. Anything else, Larry, that you feel like there was something, there was another question I had, and I'll kind of wrap this up. But, you know, and this was a question I just wrote. I don't know. It's just like, how do you know something's going to be a hit? Like, and do you not know and you just go for it?
You never really know what's going to be a hit.
Stick.
Because it's just something that resonates with an audience and stuff. And you don't know. But I have a good sense for what not going to be a hit.
Okay.
So sometimes we just have stuff that's okay. We rarely have one that just falls on its face. Because I know how to predict bad, but you can never predict amazingly good.
Hmm.
You know, we're doing this podcast called Stall Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really it's a women's empowerment show. It's women of four different generations talking about subjects that are, you know, of today. And you get to hear them the different way that women of different generations look at things. And, you know, I figured it's going to take a while to catch on, but it's already, I've got three TV stations where somebody has watched it. And then they called me asking if they could have it for television.
Oh, nice.
I mean, and it's only a month old.
Nice.
So.
Nice. I mean, that's great. So you know.
So that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Larry, for being here. All your information, all your feedback, all your just experience is inspiring. I know just for someone like myself who's just doing things independently and just hearing it from you feels great to kind of have this access. And thank you for taking your time. For this.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. And I am Virgie Rodriguez for A Race of Your Own. Remember to subscribe. Leave us your comments, your whatever feedback down below, and subscribe. Thanks.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.